Hello, gay dads, and welcome to another episode of the Coming Inside Out podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dembo, and joining me is my co-host, Brian Janes. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's good to see you.
You as well.
Yeah.
It's always great to see you.
Thank you. I thought we would start this episode because we've gotten so many responses from people in the last week with just a moment of gratitude. I feel like we have so much to be grateful for where we are in our lives today, because we had touched a couple episodes ago about, did you ever think that you would be here on this podcast today, a year ago or 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. So it's like, one of the people that I was hanging out with on Sunday, he had like, was so worried for years and years and years about coming out to his family and his wife. And in talking to him, he is like, oh my God, everything I thought the coming out was going to be was not. Everybody's been very receptive and loving to him. And it's so different. So I was like, just gratitude, just a moment of gratitude.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, just in doing this, the gratitude, the feedback of if somebody has heard one little thing that they find helpful. And as we say all the time, everybody's story is different. But when you hear and you know you're not alone, it can make such a huge difference. That's a really interesting point, too, talking about the receptivity. I have to say my experience has been very similar in coming out. There has been very little, if any, negative reaction. I mean, sure, people are, concerned. They'd hear about it, what's happening with your family, with your wife. But there hasn't been, I can't say that I've felt any rejection.
Okay, yeah. I think hurtful versus negative, negative responses I could care less about because I'm living my true authenticity, but hurtful I think is different than negative.
Yeah, so I think that's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I have not had any hurtfulness come toward me my coming out. But this guy, you know, for several years that I've known him, he was really, you know, so worried and upset that this was going to like blow up in his face if he ever came out. Mm-hmm. And I saw him last week and he was just like so excited and happy, and he was out, and it was, you know, people were loving him and people were being kind to him. And it was just, it was nice that I think a lot of people build this up as is just going to like, it's going to be like a volcano and explode on them. And it's not always the case.
Right. Absolutely. Very true. What else is happening for you though, Brian?
I'm struggling, dude. I'm having a hard time. I am really, I don't know. I shouldn't say I'm waiting because if you're waiting for something, you're waiting for nothing. I am really trying to create a shift in my life, and it just is not happening for me yet. And I have no idea why. And because it's not happening, I think, okay, maybe I need to move more inward. Maybe I need to examine more where I'm at. Maybe I need to look at this through a different lens. But I feel like I've gotten to this point here today, and it feels stagnant. It does not feel alive. I don't feel like I'm thriving right now. But in saying that, when you turn on the TV or if you look at social media, I think a lot of people aren't thriving right now. So
yeah,
I'm not alone in that.
Yeah.
But you know, my career is kind of stagnant right now. I just have some things in my life that aren't moving along for me. So I'm struggling right now. I'm trying to create something for myself, but I'm struggling.
You know, one of the things I've come to try and think about for myself and is being, I know I've talked about this before, being in the moment, right? Living mm-hmm. one moment at a time. And sometimes that means saying, you know what, things are not the way I'd like them to be right now, but this is the way things are right now. And just allowing yourself to be in that. And I think the acknowledgement of that is oftentimes what can then help to move forward. But I agree, you know, this is, I'm gonna tell you, it's been a tough week for me too. Just, you know, with everything going on in the world and in personal life and lots of it just feels like it's a very stressful time. But at the same time, I really try and take a step back. And, you know, as you said earlier, I oftentimes will look at where is my life right now versus my life 2 years ago? And how much has changed? And I think one of the things, somebody actually said this to me recently as we were talking about, you know, the coming out process. And this is somebody who's been out since they were in their 20s, you know, not somebody who was married and had kids, but you do start to realize that coming out is still coming out no matter when you do it. Yes. And he said to me, you know, sometimes we think you're going to, you know, the coming out process is just going to lift, you know, your whole life and everything's going to be sunshine and roses all the time.
That's what I and thought you, from myself.
Right. And then you come back and you realize, wait a minute, I still have the bills to pay. I still have life to deal with. I still have daily obligations. And that comes weighing in. But I still feel, though, that I'm able to approach it in a better way.
Yes, I see that. So for myself, looking back, I felt like I struggled in my life because I was closeted. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, I was a shyer person. I didn't want to be an outspoken person. You know, I grew up being seen but not heard. So I thought, okay, I'm going to come out as gay. And all of these struggles that I've had in my life, struggles in my career, struggles in relationships, all this is just going to put me in this universal flow, and I'm going to be in alignment with my true self. And I'm just going to my life is just going to turn into this like thriving, great life. For me, I came out, which has been the most amazing experience for me, but my life and my world has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller, because it's hard for me to have superficial conversations with people. So I kind of like let people that were superficial in my life drop off. So conversations I have with people today now have a lot of meaning behind them. But I don't know. I wish I was thriving more than I am.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
So, but is smaller, when you say smaller, do you mean that in a negative way or?
I do. I feel that for myself, in order to heal, I had to pull myself back because I've shared before, I didn't know who I was. So if I just came out and like jumped into bed with somebody or just started dating, I would have never known who I was. So I needed to kind of like pull myself back to say, okay, who is Brian?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I like? You know, rather than the conditioned Brian, who's the true Brian? So I had to kind of like figure that out for myself. In that process, I retreated. I kind of went inward. And maybe I went too deep, I don't know, but I'm having a hard time coming out of this.
Mm.
It's been difficult.
Well, let's find some ways to lift you up.
I know. Thank you. Well, this podcast, I love this podcast. I mean, this is a passion project for me. It this is a total feel good project for me. So I love the podcast.
I couldn't agree more. And yeah, it's one of the highlights of my week when we get to spend this time together. Yes. It really is. It really is. So along those lines, and I think some of the things that we've been talking about over the past few weeks, I came across, I was rereading a book I read when I first came out, called The Velvet Rage, written by a gentleman by the name of Alan Downes. He's a therapist. And in the book, he talks about a number of stages of coming out and kind of the life in a gay man. It's not written with an audience of you know, people coming out later in life. It's a general book kind of focusing on the gay man, because it is focused on men. And the first time I read it, I was like, well, I don't feel like this really applies to me. A lot didn't resonate. And as I was kind of unpeeling some of the layers of my own background and kind of trying to also hone in, as you were talking about, like, who am I, right? Who's Mark now as a gay man? And my therapist said to me, go back and reread The Velvet Rage. And I did go back and reread it. And there's a quote that jumped out at me. He says, the problem wasn't that we were gay. It was that we believed being gay made us unlovable.
Okay.
And that just really
did you feel struck unlovable? Me. Did you feel unlovable when you were in the closet?
Well, you know what it is, as I've unpacked that, I feel for myself and from what I've seen in so many others, it's how it manifests itself. And I think a lot of it is there's a tendency, and I know I've been guilty of this and probably am still guilty of it in some ways, of being a people pleaser, of doing what's expected. Because you're afraid if you don't, you won't be loved.
Is this with your family or this is with everybody?
I think it depends on the circumstances. If I look back, you know, probably some of it was rooted in family early on, right? Your parents, how are you going to be perceived? Will you be loved? Will you not be loved? If you don't do certain things, or if you do do certain things, you won't be loved. If they know I'm gay, I won't be loved. So I have to do what's expected. I have to show up in a certain way.
Okay.
That just really struck me.
So with that quote, when you say believed being gay made you unlovable, was the unlovable you not loving yourself more than your thoughts of other people not loving you? Was the unlovableness coming from you?
That's a great question. Probably.
Yeah. More than anything. More than anything.
Yeah.
I can see me not loving me. I'm unlovable to myself. I wasn't worried about being unlovable to other people. I had so much confusion about my sexuality. So it was less about feeling worried about being unloved by other people. It was more about the confusion and the internal conflict I had with myself. That was my struggle versus not being loved by other people.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I think though it manifests itself. You know, if you believe something internally, how does that then show up externally?
Absolutely. Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
Thoughts become things.
That's it. Exactly. And sometimes I found too, you know, even talking about how you're feeling right now, sometimes just the being able to name something, that's kind of the first step to heal it. If you can't name it and say, this is what I'm feeling, this is what it is, it's very hard to move forward.
Yes, that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's like I feel like I'm an intelligent person. I feel like I do a lot of work on myself. I've have better relationships with my kids. I mean, I have so much richness in my life. But where I sit today, I think, how the fuck did I get here? How the fuck did I get in this little, tiny, small, dark space in my life when I've done so much work on myself? It's like, I don't understand it. And I don't want to beat up on myself, but it's like, I didn't come out and go through all of this to not live a bigger life than I'm living right now. And I don't know how to get from where I'm at today to where I want to be. I feel fucking lost.
What's the one, what's one step you can take? What's one thing you can do, right? It's a journey.
Yes, I know.
It's you're not going to get from here to there without
crying about it.
One step. Sometimes that's what you got to do. That's what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yes. All right. Well, that's a good quote. I read that book also. I read that book in 2020. My therapist also. It was the very first book that I bought. And I kind of spent that summer of 2020 during COVID at the beach. And I read that book probably three times cover to cover. So
It's worth going back. Yeah, you know, as I've reread it, so much more of it resonates. And it's the kind of book where I could see, you know what, I'll go back to it again and again and again, because it does help serve as reminders. And each time you're coming at it from a different point in life, a different point in the journey. And, you know, for any of our listeners, we'd love to hear, are there books that you've read or resources that you come across that have been really helpful? Because we'd love to be able to share those and talk about those. So please share with us at comingsideout@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And you and I were talking to share those.
You and I were talking earlier. We're going to kind of not dedicate an entire episode, but we've gotten a lot of responses from people, emails, comments over social media, that we're going to have one of these episodes. We're going to read some of those comments, kind of go over them. So if anybody absolutely wants to write in, we're going to be reading that and just kind of getting another person's perspective also, because some of our listeners have said, hey, bring a guest on. And we actually have a list of guests, and we tested equipment today. So we know it works. So that's coming in the very near future.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned. Yes. We are excited to be doing that. Keep expanding the ways we can bring information and good discussion to everybody.
Yeah, be of service to our community.
So, Brian, I think, and I'm looking at our notes that we keep for our discussion points here, and I think you had added this item around continuing the journey of starting a new life and missing pieces of the old life.
Yes. So I think along these same lines of what I just talked to you about, of where I'm at in my life, I was at a Gay Fathers, my event that I went to that I told you guys about last week, last Sunday, talking to a couple of guys there, and I was talking about my ex, and someone said to me, do you love your ex-wife, or are you still in love with your ex-wife? Because that's a big difference. And I said, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Do I love her versus am I in love with her? It was kind of like shook me a little bit, because I love my ex-wife. She and I spent 30 years together. We were best friends in high school. I love her.
Mm-hmm.
My body feels this comfortableness around her. My body kind of feels like it loves her, because we haven't spent a whole lot of time together. We see each other at family events, but there's a lot of people there. So it's not like she and I are sitting there having conversations with each other.
Right.
But a couple of months ago, she and I got in the car to drive 4 hours to go see my younger son, who's in the military. And we were going to go see him, and we agreed, let's just drive there together and we'll drive home together. So we spent like almost 10 hours in the car together. And I talk about not feeling alive where I'm at in this moment. My body felt so alive being in the car with her because I was a husband again. I was a father again. I had pulled the car up next to the curb. She ran in and got Starbucks coffees for us, and I was sitting outside waiting for her. And it was just like something we used to do when we were a family. And it's like, that's over. And I get that that's over. That ship has sailed. We're not that couple anymore. And as much as I know that, when I was in the car, my body didn't know that. My body was vibrating off of her body. My body was just excited, and it just brought back these feelings of, I don't know, just feeling a part of my family, being a part of her. So I'll stop with that. But
Yeah,
that's
so
why I put that in.
how did she feel
We didn't talk
during
about it.
that time?
We didn't talk about it.
Okay, fair enough.
We talked about the boys. We talked about the kids and
How did so follow-up question to that. You had this feeling while you were together and it made, kind of that aliveness, if you will. How did you feel after? Was it like
depressed. I
a
felt
letdown?
depressed.
Was it
I felt depressed.
So I, that's a really interesting point. And we're at a little bit different stages, right, on our journey. As I've shared, I'm in the process of the actual, separation. And similar, my wife and I have been together for 30 plus years. I've often said to her, there is nobody better, nobody in the world that knows me better than she does. We are still very close, and our intent is to remain close. We got to the point of separating because we realized that we wanted to maintain that closeness and staying together, as contradictory as it sounds, wouldn't allow us to do that. Because at the same time, I needed to live my life. And one of the things that it took her some time to kind of really grasp, and understandably, is that my coming out, my needing to live my life as who I am, was not a rejection of her, but rather an expansion, right, of me stepping into who I was hiding. So we are really hoping and planning and want to be intentional about, well, what are the ways we stay connected? And sure, there's the family events and there's all those things that you're going to be at and connected. In fact, I'm coming out to LA in 2 weeks to go to an event. Her best friend's son is being bar mitzvahed, and we're going to be there together. And
You're
we
going to be
want to be there
traveling
together.
together. You're going to be traveling together as a separated couple at that time, though. You guys will have moved apart from each other.
But we'll be together there. But we've talked about, I mean, we still go out to dinner together. We'll go to the movies together. We've talked about even being in separate places. It's like, you'll come over for dinner. We'll get together. We'll do things.
With
And
your kids or just the two of you? I don't
both.
know.
That's so listen, again, everybody's situation is different. I don't lose sight of the fact that I'm very lucky in the sense that we've been able to maintain that bond. But I think, to your point about kind of feeling that aliveness, I re realized that, she's still a big part of me, and I'm still a big part of her. It doesn't have to end, that part of a relationship. In fact, what we've often said is, it's not the end of our relationship. It's a different chapter in the relationship where, of course, it's going to look different. And, we've talked about the fact that, yes, at some point, you know, I very well could have a new partner, a significant other. She might as well at some point, right? But that doesn't take away from who we are to each other.
It's a very mature way of separating. When my wife and I separated, she had asked for the divorce. I have said this before. I wasn't out. I wasn't, there wasn't even a thought in my head. So I was the hurt party during our separation and divorce. I was the one who was like, not, I don't know. I don't know how well you'll resonate with this or not, but I spent 30 years with my wife secretly sacrificing myself. No one asked me to. It wasn't a condition of anything, but I secretively denied who I was so that I could be something for somebody else. So that I could be a husband, so that I could be a father, so I could be this other person. Yeah. Nobody knew about this secret sacrifice other than me. And when I was told at age 49 years old, I'm in love with you, I'm no longer in love with you, this doesn't work for me, I want a divorce, I thought, oh my God, if only this person knew what I was secretly sacrificing my entire life. And I was very angry with her. I felt so rejected. I was like, okay, this life that I wanted, this life that I was striving for, it's now over. And it was like, why did I spend my entire life denying who I was, telling myself I wasn't this person, and just like morphing into somebody I wasn't for somebody else who never asked me to?
If she hadn't asked you for the divorce, do you think you would have come out?
No, I'd still be married. I would not have come out. Wasn't a thought in my head. For so long, I thought something was wrong with me. I thought there was something wrong with me. It wasn't like I was in my 20s and I was like, oh, I'm a closeted gay man. Oh, I'm fooling the world. Oh, you know, I'm pulling the wool over everybody's eyes because I'm such a good pretender. Up until the age of 47, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you, Brian? Why you're a married man. You have a wife. You have kids. This is your life. Where are all these fucking confusing thoughts and feelings coming from? When are these going to go away? When am I going to outgrow these thoughts in my head? I literally thought at some point in time in my life, you know, I was going to get married and these thoughts were going to go away. I was going to have kids and these thoughts were going to go away. I was going to like excel in my career and these thoughts were going to go away. Oh, I'm going to buy a bigger house and these thoughts are going to go away. I was running from them.
Yeah.
For 30 years.
Yeah. But, you know, that's interesting. Going back to the Velvet Rage, one of the points, one of the things that he talks about is there is this tendency, and you have to be careful because you never want to, you know, nothing ever applies to everybody, right? But there is a preponderance. If you look across the gay community, however you want to define that, chasing something external, looking for validation that we're okay.
Yes.
And it's not only when we're in the closet, it's even being out, still looking for that. And it, you know, kind of, it's like always looking for, okay, if I get this, then it's all going to be okay. If I get this, it's all going to be okay. And sometimes we just, you know, how do we just get to the point to say, this is who I am. I have nothing to be ashamed of. I'm good just as who I am. And that's hard. That can be really hard, especially it's hard for anybody coming out, I think. Even in today's world, although obviously we all know how much the climate has changed towards the LGBTQ plus community over the past several months. But even with today's generation where it's easier to come out, it's still hard. And then you compound that with those of us that have lived a life living a certain way, it's so much harder. And that shame and that guilt and that, oh, wait a minute, right? I have all this. Who am I to feel that way? That's real. That's real.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to what you had said about the unlovable and the quote that you had read. Never in my life, up until the last few years, have I ever told myself, Brian, I love you. Mm. I spend so much time walking my dog, telling myself, Brian, I love you. Brian, I'm so proud of you. Brian, yeah. Good job. I praise myself for where I am today. I would have never done that in the past. I would have never told myself I was proud of myself. I would have never told myself that I love myself. One of the blessings of coming out is being able to be not authentic with just other people, but authentic with myself and just really love and appreciate me for the first time in my life.
And you should. And you should. That's so important, right? I think we don't do that enough. And we all are. It can be very easy to be way too hard on ourselves and holding up to, and I think it comes back to, right, we live these lives of what's expected of us and how we need to be for other people and at the expense of ourselves. And we need to be able to say, I am lovable, I love myself, and we need to be able to go easy on ourselves.
Yes.
Right?
I agree. I totally
agree. Grace for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. Not easy. Always, yeah. But it's key. And sometimes, again, it's just that reminding yourself, being able to say that, to have that that affirmation, if you will.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. And allow yourself some fun.
Yes. Absolutely.
Even in the midst of the stress and the craziness and everything else. Yeah. What else you got today?
So I'm going to segue. We talked about, someone wrote in actually, and we'll read that. I'm not going to read the email, but somebody wrote in and they kind of, well, a couple of people wrote in and gave us their opinions or thoughts about dating, the gay culture, the gay community, the apps and all that kind of stuff. But I was on Facebook the other day, looking at a site. And they had posted some photos of one of the events they had. And I was like, oh my God, this guy in one of these photos was just like gorgeous. And I was like, oh, who is he?
So I kind of I was me? You were looking at my photo?
Exactly. I went down this little rabbit hole of like, okay, who is this guy? And I went on and I found who he was. And I clicked on his profile because I wanted to just see who he was. You know, if you're on Facebook, you can go about this person. And I clicked on it. And when I was married and on Facebook, I was married. There was a little logo or a little icon that you click on and you're married. And then when my wife and I divorced, I didn't say divorced or whatever. I just removed that as visible field.
Yeah.
I didn't need to announce to the world that I was single. Right. So I just removed that as a field. This person on Facebook, now there is a field for I'm in an open relationship with, and you can tag the person
on Facebook. And an open relationship. I mean, because I know you can tag, like, you know, if you're in a relationship with somebody, but in an open relationship.
You're in an open relationship. That's exactly what it says. Because, you know, there's widow, there's single, there's divorce.
Interesting.
There's actually a tab in an open relationship with.
That's interesting. Like,
here we go again with these open relationships.
Yeah. Yeah.
How they work or how they don't work. That's...
And I know we've talked a little bit, I think, about open relationships. They can be hard. They can be hard, but
yes,
Well, they can be hard. And I think this isn't only in the gay world, even in the hetero world. I think you're seeing more and more, especially about the younger generation, kids these days, I'll tell you, in open relationships and polyamorous relationships. And they can work if both parties are comfortable with it. And you set the boundaries and the parameters. But that's just, but it, I think it just is an interesting commentary that Facebook has that now as a feature. Maybe it's something that's always been there. I wasn't aware of it. Well,
you know,
but kind of saying it's like more and more. But more and more saying, okay, wait a minute, you know, maybe, starting to be more of an acceptance, and whether somebody says, oh, an open relationship is right for me or not right for me. Okay. That's, you know, that's fine. That's personal choice. To me though, it's about, you know, look at the whole process. Why is it so hard for people to come out? Why is it harder for people coming out later in life? It's because of society's expectations. I remember when my wife and I were, not long after I had come out to her, we were seeing a couple's counselor, couple's therapist. And she said to us from the get-go, it's like, it's up to you guys to define what your relationship is.
Yes.
And that guidance, actually, what I was talking about before, is kind of what helped us get to where we are. It's like, it doesn't have to be one extreme or the other. People could look at us from the outside looking and say, what are you doing? That's crazy. How can Mark go and be gay and that you guys can still have a close relationship? It's like, it's up to us to decide.
Yes. As a heterosexual couple, if you were having sex with women and she was having sex with men, you're called a swinger.
Right.
Right?
Right. Right.
You're a swinger. Regardless of what type of open relationship you have, either a gay or heterosexual open relationship, it requires, from what I was reading, the relationship to be a lot healthier than a just normal relationship.
Absolutely. And
when you look at relationships today versus relationships that were formed in the 70s, 80s, or 90s, where we worked on our relationships, where we had conflict resolution, and when our marriages lasted 20 and 30 years, versus today, you see an increase in divorce and shorter term marriages. I don't know, because of social media, because of technology or whatever, you know, people just being detached from one another. Well, it just really takes a lot more.
I don't know. That's interesting though, because I actually even think back, you know, in the 70s and in the 80s, divorce rates were very high. And I think a lot of that, especially like when in the 70s, divorce rates really skyrocketed. And a lot of that had to do with, I think, the rise of women's rights and women's equality, right? Of a lot of women saying, I'm not going to live this way anymore. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's a really interesting point. And I don't know the research off the top of my head, so I don't want to, you know, claim I know something I don't. No. But, you know, I wonder how many relationships, I mean, even if I look at like my parents' generation and people that stayed together because it's what was expected, even if you are miserable.
Yeah.
You stayed in it.
My parents are still together. My parents are still together.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine are too. Yeah. Absolutely. But it is interesting. I mean, I think you're just seeing a lot more openness, pardon the pun, to different types of relationships these days. Again, gay, hetero, whatever, across the spectrum. Just more of an openness to different relationships.
An open relationship, because I don't know, I'm not in one, but an open relationship isn't it primarily just for sex? It's an open relationship, for intimacy, but sex.
There can be a lot of different iterations of what that means. I mean, yes, there can be open relationship where it's, you know, the couple says, hey, our relationship is primary. And I mean, if you look at a lot of open gay relationships, it might be, yes, our relationship is the primary in terms of who we are to each other, but we're going to play on the side. And sometimes that can be, we're open, but we're only going to play together. We'll bring in a third. Or there's guidelines. It's like, and that I think really depends on the couple and how they define it. But the key to any relationship like that to work is it's got to be, you have to start from the point of a trusting relationship where you're able to communicate. What are the guidelines? What are the boundaries? What do we do? What do we don't do? What do we communicate with each other? And, you know, it's complicated. And then there are relationships, you know, if you look at what would be called polyamorous relationships, and that's coming from the place of saying it is possible to love more than one person. So that's where you get, you know, throuples, where everybody's in a relationship together. And then there's also within, I've seen this in mixed orientation marriages where a couple, you know, presumably, let's say, you know, man and woman, guy comes out as gay, but the couple decides they want to stay in relationship. They have, they'll open up the relationship and it's kind of what's called a closed loop relationship. So the guy may have one male partner, still stays married and to his wife, but they all know each other, and they it kind of becomes part of an extended family. So there's a lot of different ways that you can look at what is an open relationship. And I come back to, it's like, well, however people want to define it and what works for them.
I agree. What works for you? I'm a monogamous person. I felt like I had a trust with my wife. She and I developed this intimate bond with each other. I mean, it grew over a 30-year period.
Sure.
I just don't know. I don't know. I obviously had one massive secret. But other than that, I was an open book with her.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I struggle with
but that's the whole point, Brian, right? It's like there isn't one right way. It's like it's to me that is where I think the barriers in our society are still very much up, because it's this expectation that there is only one way. That it must be a monogamous and in most cases hetero relationship. But if monogamy is the right path for you, that's the, you know, it's like there's no right or wrong way. And it's about how do we allow these different things to exist and just say, do what is right for you. If it's not harming other people, live and let live, as they say.
Yes.
Right?
Amen. Live and let live.
Yes.
God. Yes.
Yeah.
Can't agree more than that.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm going to bring up one more thing because, you know, I went down this thing with I'm in an open relationship with, and I was doing some research online, and I had shared with you that I met this guy online and he wanted to like drive from several hours away and just like had this intenseness with me, this immediate intenseness with me in emails and just this whole thing. And I was like, oh, it just feels like creepy, too much, too soon, too quick. It's like, take things slow, let things come organically. There's actually a term. It's called love bombing. It's when somebody in a matter of just a couple of text exchanges, it's like they turn on super hot and heavy and you're gorgeous and I love you. And no, you know, it's like they fall in love so quickly. So,
well, but Brian, you are lovable.
Beware of somebody love bombing on you.
Yes. Love bombing. Okay. Good to know. All right. Well, hey, I see we're at about 45 minutes here, and it just flies by.
I know.
It flies by.
Hopefully it flies by for the listeners, too.
I was going to say the same thing, right? Like, will you guys just shut up already?
All right. Well, so we're going to be having some guests on here. We're going to be reading some letters from our listeners, people that write in. So if you want to write in, cominginsideout@gmail.com. And we'll leave it at that for today, huh?
Yeah. Well, listen, you have a great rest of the week.
You too. And
do something nice for yourself.
Thank you. Thank you. Be you well. As well. All right.
I will. All right.
See you soon, Mark. Bye.
Take care. Bye.